Hello, everybody out there, viewing wherever you are, which could possibly be on the Facebook pages of Popular Resistance or KBOO Community Radio or any number of other platforms, including my accounts on Twitter, YouTube, VK, LinkedIn, Twitch, and Facebook. This is David Rovics with another episode of Fifth Estate Live, which comes to you every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. I host it every Tuesday along with other discussion interview shows, which I also host on Wednesdays and Fridays at the same time, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. They go up on all those same platforms, the Facebook pages of Popular Resistance and KBOO Community Radio and elsewhere, and then they go up in audio form as podcasts if you look for This Week with David Rovics on any podcasting platform. Today, we are spending the hour with longtime Detroit area talk show host and organizer and author and longtime editorial collective member of Fifth Estate Magazine, a quarterly publication which comes out in print every year and every four times a year. And we're on the summer issue now, and we're going to talk with Peter Werby about the elections and the current historical moment. And we sure do keep on getting a lot of people on telling, unexpectedly saying how much they think that everybody should vote for Biden and then go, you know, as they go along with doing other things that perhaps have, potentially more potential for changing the course of history than voting. But it's certainly a theme that is often on people's minds over really the past 4 years or more, but especially the past few months. And well, what do you think? Good to see you, Peter. Tell us about your thoughts.
Well, I don't know. They're pretty, in many ways, pretty scattered, but maybe you can help me put them together. You know, it's, remember that old thing about Lucy and the football, that, Lucy would hold the football for Linus or Charlie Brown. And then every time she'd take it out of the way and he'd fall on his butt and he'd never learned. Well, there's
That's
something.
Our system right there. Yeah.
But we are, as a little aphorism that we have at the Fifth Estate is we say we've been reduced to in a macro sense, in a larger societal sense, to please, sir, don't kill everything so fast. And that's what a Biden vote was. I mean, on a more micro level, where for lack of, I'm trying to think how inclusive to be, but let's just be real narrow. I mean, anarchists work most effectively on a local level in movements that are based around defending the environment, native rights, women's, the whole panoply of what are being violated constantly on a daily basis in this society. And of course, somebody like Donald Trump ratcheted that up considerably. I mean, there is the thought. I mean, if you're in prison, and the only time I've spent overnight in jail out of actions, being arrested in actions, but it was you slept on the floor and you had a bologna sandwich and then you were out. But so I don't know what it's like being in for a long term. But we've talked to enough people to know that it's much better to have a kind and guard that follows the rules as opposed to a brutal, corrupt one, right? But that's not, we don't want that to be our main slogan. We want nicer guards. And sure, I mean, there is such ecstatic relief at Trump being gone and all one that he represented and the actual harm that he did and continues to do, that the idea, for instance, they say one of the first things that Biden will do will be to reverse the 100 executive orders that Trump put in that was either rolled back Obama directives or put in new ones that gave the polluters and the planet rapers and the rest of the people that do such harm to the environment, giving them free rein. Well, that's good, but it's not like under Obama, the environment was safe, that industrialism had stopped poisoning us and the planet. But that's what I mean. Please, sir, stop killing everything so fast. Well, In the short run, that's okay. Voting, I don't know. I'll ask you, David. So, because you know your ideas are as good as mine. I mean, there's a lot of people that, I don't know if you hear. In fact, you always talk about what a nice cover the new Fit the State is by Seth.
I'm completely in love with that cover. I mean, it's an amazing piece of art, and it's the cover.
Let's see, there we go.
And it's just it tells such a story too.
Yeah,
just in pictures, which is
well, I know
art is so good at.
All about, is my chair squeaking really bad? Is
it? No, not really bad. No.
Okay. That's good. I'll try to be calm. Anyway, the Fifth Estate follows traditional anarchist, principles, and, you know, all the while being aware of innovations in the modern era, how we can, change and improve, what has been taken, from the past. But one of the things that anarchists always believed in is that it was useless and even harmful to involve oneself in the electoral process or politics. This was the statecraft of the institution that we want to abolish. So how does one justify taking part in it?
And then, of course, there's a matter of degree, perhaps, as well. I mean, there's a lot of people out there, perhaps, people who, oh, gosh, I don't want to say terribly ageist things, but it's from my experience in my life and observation, there's a lot of arrogant people who maybe have a more or less simplistic view of life, and oftentimes they're teenagers, and they're watching now, and maybe they're pissed at me for saying that. I don't know, but that's okay. You can write me and tell me how offended you are. That's all right. But there's this kind of idea that it has to be everything or nothing, that you either have to, there are people out there, no small number of people that would rather organize the revolution under fascism rather than under something more like social democracy. Not that Biden's a social democrat, but I think that it seems obvious that we would rather be organizing in the context of some kind of a social democracy, as much as it's harder to organize in that situation because more people have more of the good things in life, and so less need to see, to overthrow capitalism. And that's one of the obstacles when you have a actually functioning state that's serving the basic purpose of, maintaining domestic tranquility by making sure nobody's starving and that sort of thing. Well, then, that's a harder atmosphere to organize in some ways, but in other ways, it's much easier. So, I mean, to me, it seems obvious that you can take a few minutes out of every couple of years to, fill out a ballot and mail it in. I mean, if you're a news junkie anyway, you know who these candidates are, So it's not like you need to do much research, and you don't necessarily have to be actively involved with promoting a campaign to bother voting. But when you see how slim the margins of victory so often are, you realize that actually, it's not the by far not the biggest way you can have an influence, but you can at least have some impact locally. I mean, the kind of things that we just passed, the ordinances we just passed in Oregon, I think are a perfect case in point. And we've just legalized hard drugs. We've just legalized psilocybin for medicinal use. We've just passed what will probably be the strictest oversight of any police police force in the U.S., which is still very problematic and is being challenged by the police union immediately as soon as we passed the ordinance. But, and we also elected two candidates who are both supported by the police union at the same time as we voted to oversee the union, which is part of the problem with the elections is that it's always Democrats. And so in this city and in many cities, there's nobody else is running. And so in order to try to differentiate between two candidates, all of whom are, putting themselves out there as totally progressive, the most progressive thing since Bernie Sanders. And they're, of course, generally, they're either all establishment landlord at police union candidates, or some of them aren't. But to tell the difference between them actually requires a lot of research. And there's still widespread ideas around the country, I think, on a national level, that our mayor here, Ted Wheeler, is progressive. And, he's not by any reasonable definition of the term. He's just a longstanding servant of the landlord lobby and the a fan of massive police budgets and everything else, but you know, when he gets any press, it's always painting him as this sort of progressive. Well, but I mean, I think I feel like I'm back in like when Obama first got elected, and I'm, you know, waiting for the cabinet appointments to start. And I know that it's going to be a bunch of Goldman Sachs, former Goldman Sachs executives. And I know that it's going to be another administration that is going to be the launching mechanism for the next attempt at a fascist takeover, because that's what the Democratic Party seems to be best at these days, is just basically, you know, pretending to be progressive while they totally make life worse year by year with their free trade policies and you know, continued deindustrialization and, you know, increased service sector. I mean, all this automation, all the things, the trends that are happening that they're not doing anything to really, you know, deal with. And things just get worse for most people in this country. And it's their fault. And then the Republicans can come to power and pretend to be the party of the working class, actually, which is what they're pretending to be, which is astounding that they can actually manage to get away with that while they're clearly serving the interests of the corporate elite. But then that's what the Democrats are doing too. So it's hard to, you know, it's just a matter of rule of law or, you know, what we've had, which is another thing entirely. But of course, rule of law, I mean, that got us, you know, nowhere. I mean, what laws are over? I mean, Obama or Biden, maybe they're less corrupt in this incredibly blatant ways that Trump is corrupt. But of course, it was under Obama that we had the worst environmentalist disaster in the history of the world.
Remind me.
2010, the Deepwater Horizon.
Oh, yeah, that qualifies, and that's more than, say, Chernobyl.
But it depends on whether you're talking about half-life, and I think that maybe Chernobyl or Fukushima, in terms of the immediate destruction of the environment, yeah, definitely.
Well, again, they're stewards of the system, and they're different sectors of the ruling class. And let me just go way back, though. I mean, anarchism is a maximalist philosophy or political worldview, is that we don't want any compromise. We don't want reforms. There was a movie, ever see it? When was it? From the 70s, Murat Saad, and it was a musical, and they're singing, you know, we want a revolution now. And that's ultimately what anarchism wants. We don't want better laws. We don't want different people. We want an end to capitalism. We want, you know, an end to the political state. I mean, that seems pretty fanciful as we sit here right now, where the political state dominates every sector of the world. But it comes with a critique, and it makes people like us, particularly, or people that, in, you know, follow that philosophy, ultimately suspicious of even the Obamas, even the Joe Bidens. And so I think that's important. And I think the people the anarchists that called for abstention and were critical, I don't know if you read the letter in this issue of the Fifth Estate, the fall Fifth Estate, that saying that I was urging people to vote for Biden, which wasn't the case. But yeah, I got mailed a ballot, and I went, yeah, because we were saying earlier about better to have a nice prison guard than a bad prison guard. And Trump was an extraordinarily bad prison guard for everything that we can chalk up to, you know, to Obama and Biden and all the Democrats before them. And you know, the list is endless for sure. But I don't want to erode the critique of the state that anarchists put forward. And I think the people that are hardcore abstentionists and are critical that, you know, we didn't do what we did for maybe, I don't know, almost all of the Fifth Estate's existence, which was to say, you know, don't vote. It only encourages them. If voting could change anything, it would be illegal. I'm trying to think of all the other little slogans. And I wrote a lot of those. And for years and years and years and years, I didn't vote. And I know if I didn't send my ballot in, nothing would change. And, but there is something that it was so offensive. Well, actually, I'm going off in the wrong direction. I was saying that that Trump was so offensive. It's not that he offended me as a human being, which, of course, he does, you know, a liar, a sexual predator, everything that we know about him. But rather, he has been able to mobilize an extraordinary, if we were to be kind, we would say a proto-fascist grassroots movement. And I'm willing to be less kind and say it has all the qualities of fascism. And what was really needed was, even though the Democrat, again, who represents liberal values, they did to my whole family, or due to my whole family, the Democrats do. They represent peace, justice, racial harmony, environmentalism, everything. That's what the Democrats represent, whether they are or not. You hit it pretty much on the head, David, that they, you know, they're not adequate to the task. I mean, Biden's going to rejoin the Paris, what are they called? Not environmental accords. What are the Paris? Yeah,
the Paris Accords, which have no teeth, by the way. I mean, exactly. This has been talked about for so much, but that has no teeth.
That's what I mean. Everything that Biden is going to restore is nowhere near close to being adequate to deal with, in terms of the environmental situation, what we're facing. I mean, we're facing environmental catastrophe, and they're, you know, diddling around with meetings in Paris, you know, and they say, well, it's a good start. Well, we don't got a lot of time for starts, you know. Yeah. But let me just go back to the critique of the state. So what these abstentionists are saying is that by people like you and me, David, voting and saying it's worthwhile, what, no matter what it accomplishes, including if it would have been an overwhelming rout, say, you know, that Biden would have taken 40 states and won 60-40% or something like that. They said even that kind of repudiation of Trumpism isn't worth eroding that critique. And I don't know. I guess it's hard for me to believe that if you or I voted, for one thing, the only reason people even know we voted is because we're telling them, right? I mean, how long did it take you? It took me like 5 minutes, you know?
Yeah, certainly.
I didn't even need a stamp, you know? I didn't have to go through that. And so I doubt that. And you know, this is why I wish we had callers, or people can do chat on this, right?
They can. And I just so often don't pay attention to it. It hasn't been working on the main platform here. I have to do a little extra step to try to see.
Let me see if I can.
There's a way I can do it. You don't need to worry about it. I can. Okay. But no. Oh, here we go. You see. I just need to click on this thing where it says.
Yeah, I just put in hi.
Oh yeah, on Facebook or something, or no. which platform?
Well, it says private chat.
Oh, that's just to me. All right. But here we go. Right. I'll be able to see it in a minute. Now, if anybody has a comment, I should be able to see it now on the.
Usually the argument oftentimes from either leftists who want to, who is urging everyone to vote for the Greens, or for anarchists who are saying don't vote, they would talk about the Democrats and Biden's history as if we didn't know that. You know, that somehow we were fooled into thinking that Biden was going to bring about some, you know, Denmarkian social democracy that, you know, you've spoken about in the past. That's not it. I mean, my main goal was to disrupt this enthusiastic grassroots fascist movement that's armed and coherent and militant. And even with the brave comrades of Antifa and the Black Bloc, who will meet the sword tip of that, you know, the Proud Boys and what have you in the streets, and they're to be admired for that, for their actions. The real mass is a liberal movement, you know, that think the Democratic Party is a wonderful institution, and there's no capacity there to stand up to the energy. I mean, that's what fascists have. They have enormous energy, and so I'm fearful. I'm fearful what happened. Just one final thing. I've yet to have anybody say to me, "Oh, by you voting, you have diminished the capacity to develop an anarchist movement, which is ridiculous. Like, maybe, hold on, maybe next time, if they think that's true, we should just vote and not tell anybody.
I mean, it seems to me that actually, in my lifetime, the best organized and most effective movements have been organized by anarchists, whether sure. or not they call themselves anarchists, and oftentimes that's not something that's publicly mentioned, but by the very organizers that we're talking about. But like I'd say, the Occupy Wall Street, the Global Justice Movement, are two examples of basically anarchist organized movements organized along anarchist principles, and also very effective, had a real impact on not on policies around the world as well as on consciousness around the world. But these movements, they also have, Occupy Wall Street and the Global Justice Movement, what they also have in common is that they were both born during democratic administrations. And I don't know if that's a coincidence or not, but what is very clear about the circumstances of being happening during a democratic administration was it was very clear that this was a movement against capitalism, and it wasn't about a partisan thing. Well, like, whereas with the anti-war movement around 2002, 2003, what you realized after a while, if you didn't realize it right away, is that you were largely surrounded by democratic voters and people that were, it was largely a partisan democratic movement. Of course, there's a lot of people who are against war, and maybe they don't all define themselves as Democrats, and loads of people who were to the left of anybody who would identify as a Democrat were going, of course, and to the protests and organizing the protests as well. But it was a very different character, the movement altogether.
Sure, and that's where essentially, I'm just echoing what you said. That's where the power of an extraordinarily small movement or people that adhere to the philosophy of anarchism is in actions like that, and going back even, further into Seattle in 1999, and the whole idea of anarchist organizing, of affinity groups, and what is it, the people's mic, is it microphone, people's microphone, or people's megaphone,
human mic, were they calling it?
Now I'm forgetting. But yeah, all of that stuff, people do it. Yeah, we don't have a hierarchical, this group isn't run by a hierarchical steering committee and grand leader. We're a collective. It used to be, that if you said you're a collective, people wouldn't even know what the hell, that's how people get their trash removed. It's collected or something like that. Now it's common language. So in many ways, this is where our success lies. So voting, whether David Rovics and Peter Werbe voted or didn't vote, I don't think matters one bit. It's how we spend the rest of our waking hours and how pointed it is into local activity that sometimes think about, Black Lives Matter too. It was so broad and mostly led by people of color that I wouldn't ascribe that to anarchists. But again, that, where's the leader? We're all leaders, you hear that over and over again. He's in my affinity group. And so I guess I would say that. I would say that electoralism on the part of anarchists is an extraordinary waste of a radical's energy. On the other hand, people have said to me, Trump is so bad that they actually went out and did door-to-door stuff, and they, family members of mine who are Fifth Estate supporters, they saw that Trump was such an incredible danger, and not just, as we always used to say and still say, two capitalist parties or representing two separate wings of the ruling class, that this was a unique danger. And I think it is. And as I was saying before, I don't think it's ended. In fact, it could be gearing up. I don't know what's happening out there, but I mean, there's hundreds of people showing up in Michigan, at Lansing, the state capital, armed, all, with, completely divorced from signs, completely divorced from reality. And, you know, the these people aren't to be discounted. I mean, maybe they'll just get funneled into the, well, they already are in the Republican Party. I was going to say, like the Tea Party, that's where they, you know, they started off as an insurgent movement and just became the mainstream of the Republican Party. I don't know what's going to happen with these people. They never showed up with semi-automatic rifles.
No, this showing up with all these semi-automatic rifles in such numbers is all new, certainly in my lifetime. And now, of course, on the when we have protests these days, it's so common, more common than not, that there are assault rifles on both sides. That security, the folks doing security on our side are armed with assault rifles as well.
Not here yet.
Right. And then when the Proud Boys and Patriot Front and these fascist groups come to town, they are always the number of people with arms, you know, far outnumbers the number of people on our side with arms. I mean, it's their numbers might not be bigger depending on the day, but sometimes their numbers are quite a bit bigger, and of course they're all armed. So it's a very, very alarming development. Obviously, the fascist movement that's developing, that doesn't usually call itself fascist, but sometimes actually even embraces the term. And but then what especially concerns me now, of course, is that as Ajamu Baraka put it in an article he just put out the other day on Counterpunch, he said Biden's main job is now to put the left to sleep. But it seems to be, that's the main job that the Democrats have when they come to power. But this is exactly, of course, the opposite of what is needed if we actually want to prevent fascism, you know. And yeah. Whether there's going to be people in enough numbers who are able to see through the situation that we're in and be able to really organize a real movement that will bring us forward. But of course, the problem is, of course, as every time there's a Democrat in power, as with Republicans, the stratification of wealth increases and the working class living standards decrease. And that's just been going on since the 70s under both parties, right? But then if that process doesn't reverse, and if anybody's going to reverse that process among the two parties, you would at least traditionally assume it might be the Democrats, although at this point it's quite obviously not going to be either party, according to the precedent of Bill Clinton and Barack Obama's administrations. You know, during both, you know, administrations, the working class suffered immensely. And I mean, you know, of course, the financial crisis had to do with that. And I'm not trying to say it was all about the democratic governance as opposed to the other party, but they were both voting for deregulating the banks and doing all the kinds of things that led to the financial crisis. It wasn't just Republicans responsible for that either, although they're more enthusiastic about deregulating everything.
Well, everybody, you know, hope, what are they? Well, maybe this isn't the right, hope dies a morning. I mean, no, that's not the right phrase then. You know, there's some hope that given that now, things like the 1% are on, that's one of the things that Occupy brought out, that suddenly we're talking about capitalism. Suddenly we're talking about, you know, the incredible disparity in distribution of income, it would make sense for the Democrats actually to put forth more progressive legislation. I mean, it's hard for me to believe they're going to win both Senate seats in Georgia, but if they do, that'd be the only chance. I mean, $15 an hour, one in Florida, even though, you know, that Trump took the state. I mean, and that's what's so bizarre. 70 million people among us, people that walk among us, that look just like you and me, voted for this guy that is so corrupt, is a pathological liar, a serial sexual predator, and on and on and on and on and on. And yet people were somehow able to overcome that, to the point where more people of color voted for Trump, more gays voted for Trump, more Muslims voted for Trump. What, you know, you wonder what's going on. Hey, can we do this? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's on the half hour. Maybe we can do.
Oh yeah, let's mention that. What? I also want. I'm looking at the chat window here. Yeah, you are.
Let's do a commercial.
Fifth Estate Live. Fifth Estate Live comes to you right here, and on every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, and you can also find it all archived on fifthestate.org, as well as various other places. If you look for This Week with David Rovics on any podcasting platform. And you can subscribe to Fifth Estate as well at fifthestate.org, and you can get wonderful t-shirts as well. What do you got a good t-shirt on that advertises?
There you go. There you go.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah.
And on chat, Peter, there's a few things that somebody.
Continue the advertisement a little.
Oh, yes. The advertisement. Yes.
Coming out soon is the Fifth Estate Anarchist Review of Books. This is done by guest editors in Brooklyn. It's going to be in a different format. And everything I've seen of it, it's going to be this incredible issue. So if you're a subscriber now, we're just about to send out renewal letters. So take a look at your label. If it says 408 or below, you need to resubscribe. If you want a sample issue, or as David just said, you want to subscribe and go to fifthestate.org, look at the drop-down menu. And you can get a lot of special offers like this t-shirt that goes along with it. All right, sorry.
Excellent.
We're getting chat.
I'm learning how to make the announcement better next time. Right. Yeah, we... first of all, somebody on YouTube is just pointing out Biden has not won yet. And then there's also somebody's wondering how you would contextualize ranked choice voting. And then somebody else is mentioning that Ajamu Baraka, the Green Party candidate that I quoted, was a shill for the murderous Assad regime. And I have no idea about that, so I don't know about that.
The latter is true. Yeah. I would say, let me just pick up on the Greens. The Greens have done such harm to themselves by running presidential candidates. In other words, there is such antipathy to them because of the fear that they were drawing. I mean, whether this is justified or not, I'm just saying, and this is empirical pretty much, that because of drawing votes away from what they see as the Democrats, they deny a lot of this, by the way. But again, this is the perception. Here in Michigan, people say that it was because of Jill Stein's Green campaign in 2016 that Michigan went to Trump. I mean, we could argue with a Green all day, but that's, and what they really need to do is what they did, and you're, I think, pretty familiar with them in Europe. They need to really go local completely, and they did themselves no good whatsoever. They didn't get publicity. They didn't get very many votes this time around, and they say people were angry with them for doing this, so they ought to rethink all of that. What was the other? Ranked choice voting. I don't care. Sorry. Sounds flippant, but it's nothing. If it makes the democratic choices, small d democratic choices, better, which they say, good. I don't know.
I mean, certainly my experience spending a lot of time outside of the United States, where democracies tend to involve more than two parties, it tends to work a lot better in terms of serving the people's interests when there are more than two parties, you know, as a rule.
Yeah. Let's talk a little more about fascism, too. And, you know, there's always been a debate on the left of, you know, what exactly is fascist. Sometimes we just say, you know, if a police chief orders his men to attack one of our demonstrations, we say they're fascists or they're brown shirts or what have you. But fascists, as I think you and most people listening know, has a specific reference to it. And generally, they're mass-based populist movements that arise in periods of crisis in capitalist society, most notably in the 20s and 30s. The ruling class there, which was, you know, they were, you know, up Schitt's Creek without a paddle when it looked like revolution was on the agenda. So fascism, you know, the brown shirts and the black shirts and the rest of them throughout Europe, they were the paddle. They were the defense mechanism. I mean, contrary to what Marx said, that the strata above the working class, what he called the petty bourgeoisie, the small merchants and craftsmen and all that, would fall into the working class and become revolutionaries. Didn't happen. They weren't willing to give up social status and privilege and what have you. And so they wanted to maintain, you know, the old society. And you know, even some of them, and we see some reflection of that today, but particularly in Germany, they were national socialists. I mean, they never, you know, brought about that program. But one of the things that that classic, real fascism, some people say that, you know, Hitler wasn't even a classic fascist. But again, I don't think the people that got, you know, that he destroyed would want to get into that kind of intellectual debate. But that fascism, what it did was to mitigate the class antagonisms. In other words, would not allow capital to exploit the workers, and would not allow the workers to expropriate capitalism, all under the aegis of the state, which, you know, projected itself as powerful and, you know, and militaristic and what have you. But always within it, and now there's no, you know, I mean, we're not supposed to call our political opponents crazy, right, or anything like that, because, but does, you know, the people that made up the black shirts and the brown shirts, I mean, is anybody going to argue that these people were these sadistic psychopaths? Well, it was the needs of the need for a defense mechanism for capitalism joined with this mass psychopath pathology. So here, with Trump, there is no economic crisis. There is a social crisis that's going on. And so really all you have is this psychopathology. That's why this QAnon insanity has such resonance, you know. But even then, I mean, what was the problem with Germany? It was the Jews. You know, it had nothing to do with capitalism, right? It didn't have anything to do with who owned what and who exploited who. It was the Jews. Well, that's as insane as, you know, saying that the Democrats are running, the pedophile rings out of a pizzeria. Hey, I spent all my years in radio. What do you do when your nose itches uncontrollably? You just,
on radio, it doesn't matter, right?
I'm scratching, you know? Oh! I guess I could have just done that, and I've got attention.
Yeah, on radio, you could just click the mute button. And right, right. You're doing it.
Yeah. So we have, I mean, think about the elements of fascism, the armaments, the deep religiosity, and you start having people like Steve Bannon calling for people being beheaded, like he called for the beheading of Dr. Fauci and somebody else. I thought I wrote that down. You have this sheriff in Arkansas that just resigned, talking about it, wanting to, he wanted the head of the FBI, Bannon wanted the head of the FBI beheaded. I mean, the sheriff talking about wanting to death to all Marxist Democrats. Well, I think between you and me, David, we probably know about probably 9% of all the Marxist Democrats in the country, right? Most of the Democrats aren't Marxist.
No.
And the rest of the people listening, you know, they might know another high percentage. So it's just crazoids, yet they have the capacity to do what? And I guess what I'm concerned about, what do we do to combat that? How do we gain that energy that they have, that enthusiasm, that triumphalism? I mean, you can just, you remember that old film Cabaret? Did you ever see that musical?
Don't remember. It's been too long if I did.
Oh my God. I just saw it recently. Well, it's worth looking at this scene where this, the people and the heroes and or the protagonists in the film, they're out in the countryside in Germany. And all of a sudden this kid starts singing, this song, Tomorrow Belongs to Me, which is worth a Google. All you got to do is go Tomorrow Belongs to Me. And this is a spoiler alert here. And he's singing, and suddenly the camera backs up, and he's in the Hitler Youth, and he has a swastika armband. And suddenly this whole beer garden is standing and singing. As I'm saying this, I'm getting chills down my spine. And I mean, we have some enthusiasm, and you see that without a doubt in any number of demonstrations or celebrations or actions against the fascists, to be sure. But the sustained movement, I mean, we don't have that, and we may need a defense movement against these people that doesn't depend on the police, because I don't know, I'm not out in Portland like you are. Do the police do a very good job of defending the left-wing demonstrators? That's a joke, but go ahead.
Right. It's for anybody that isn't aware of the role that the police plays both here in Portland and in Louisville and so many other cities. I mean, I know this is an anarchist radio program, and people might already agree with this assessment, but it's really obvious and clear what they do is whenever there's enough fascists around that the fascists don't need protection, the police abandon the city. And they do that all the time and consistently. They just consider the fascists to be like deputized cops. And whatever they do, the cops basically just look the other way, unless there's people, sometimes really flagrant violations, like they're pointing loaded weapons around at people, then occasionally, especially when they're being filmed doing that by journalists, occasionally they'll get arrested.
Role. Think of, like, you know, and way back in labor history and, in Hazard County and in Bisbee, Arizona. I mean, it was always the cops could depend on, you know, this armed citizenry to combat the IWW or the mine workers. Anyways,
a lot of people, Peter, are talking about not on the comments right now, but what I keep on hearing from so many people is the fear of what happens when there's a fascist leadership that is more. Trump has a certain charisma, but it seems to me and a lot of other people that there could be a fascist leadership that is equally charismatic but much more competent.
Sure.
And some people mentioned Mike Pompeo. I don't know if he's got the competence, but not the charisma. But it seems like it would need to be a combination of these things. It's pretty essential for any good fascist leader. But there's bound to be people out there who can mobilize all that energy so much better than Trump is mobilizing it. Because it seems to me that there's a lot of energy out there among the far right, and they're not being mobilized to the extent that they could be.
As we know, in the last re-election in Germany in the early 30s, the Nazi Party was only able to get 38% and it was mostly close to Trump's base, middle-sized towns, small towns, rural area, again, that thought that the big cities were just dens of iniquity and working class people who they thought ill of. Well, here what, they're talking about is that the election has been stolen from Trump by what they call Democrat cities. And that's not too easy to uncode, or I guess you decode it, don't you? You
ever anarchist notice? Jurisdictions.
Yeah. Anarchist, that it should be, right?
Yeah. I wrote a song about it. Yeah.
You did?
But yeah, that's what they call Portland, Seattle, and New York. That's what Trump administration was calling
it. We felt badly that Detroit didn't get
You didn't make it.
Didn't make the list, man.
Not enough window smashing going on there.
What do we got? Is there, we're getting towards the end of this. Well, we got a lot of time left. So if there's any more comments.
Yeah, let's see.
But the other thing, we're talking about, the rise of fascism under a more competent leadership that right now we don't have the capacity to resist. That's going to, that's what we call a wrist slitter, all right, man, it's all over for us. It's mm-hmm. not. I mean, that there are... so many examples of admirable organizing in local communities around the country. And so all this stuff, Black Lives Matter during the summer, it just dominated everything. And now you never hear of it. Well, I'm sure demonstrations are still going on every night in Portland.
Multiple in different parts of the city, but you're definitely the media is focusing in different ways, and that affects so much of what people see that's going on, and also the numbers of the protests. Because of course, when the media talks about a protest that's about to happen, basically if it's mentioned on Oregon Public Broadcasting, then there's going to be at least 10 to 20 times more people than there would be otherwise.
Right.
So that's, and then if it's not mentioned on OPB, you can be sure that there's going to be somebody berating the crowd for being too small. There's always speakers berating the crowd for being too small. We're here, you know, we didn't necessarily organize this, and it's all, you know, yeah. Facebook posts might not be the best method, but you know, you can't tell that to somebody who's berating you for being too small of a crowd.
Well, the next issue, as I said, is going to be the Fifth Estate Anarchist Review of Books. And the one after that is going to have the theme of what next? Oh, now I'm forgetting. Did I write that down? But something about, what next? Demand the impossible. Demand the impossible, of course, is the slogan from the May-June days, 1968 in Paris. And why not? Why not have the vision of the world we really want to live in? Not, you know, thank you for not killing everything so fast, sir. And I don't know what form that takes. You know, I've never been much of an organizer. I mean, I go to demonstrations. I don't plan them. I don't, I report on them all my life. I've been, you know, a journalist and involved in media. So I don't, and also I think, you know, people as they get older always say, well, you know, the youth, and yeah, but that's true. I mean, it's young people that are probably going to be the most filled with the vigor and the desire for a completely new world. And I said earlier about anarchism being a maximalist philosophy, people that still adhere to that. It doesn't mean you go out and do dumb things or you endanger yourself or other people. But just like, for instance, this next issue of the Fifth Estate, the editors for that, you know, you had on, you know, Kara Hoffman and her crew in Brooklyn. They're just filled with it. I mean, you know, I'm enthusiastic about every issue of the Fifth Estate, but it's pretty routine for me. I've been doing it for, you know, quite a few years. And in the same way, you never can tell about, you know, what's going to happen next and what needs to happen next. But where it's going to come from, I don't know.
We need a real mass movement that's not defensive in nature, but it is actually forward-looking and visionary and the kind of thing that lots of people can get involved with and get enthusiastic about. And we can't predict what it's going to be. And I mean, I only hope, you know, I just kind of figure that what it should be is around housing justice. And so that's where I've been trying to do my little work as an organizer. But if you feel like you're spitting in the wind, because I mean, really, it's, you know, you don't know when the movement's going to take off and what it's going to be, but it sure needs to happen. That's for damn sure. And some people on this chat are wondering about what you think of free speech and censorship.
What do I think about free speech and censorship? Well, you know, that's gets back to the deplatforming. You know, I was just what's the guy that writes about Antifa? Is it Mark Bray? Yeah, I think so. In fact, I just saw in Truth Out, he was writing about this mobilization of fascist force. He wrote the book called Antifa Handbook. In fact, you know, being also the producer of this program, we should get him on here.
Go on. Good plan.
Yeah.
I heard a really excellent interview with him, but I don't remember.
Yeah. He's good. I mean, at one point he says, you know, people that say, oh, you know, Antifa, you shouldn't, you know, initiate violence against the fascists and all that. So he poses the question, when is violence legitimate? I mean, except for part, you know, the committed pacifist, most people at some point, you know, if somebody's trying to, you know, hit you, you usually would put your hand up to stop them or hit them back. But he said, when would it have been okay to physically attack the Nazis? 1924? No? How about 1928? How about 1932? How about 1934 when they started outlawing parties? How about 1939 after Kristallnacht? You know, finally, you know, an Antifa figure, what was his name? General Dwight Eisenhower took it on. I said it to somebody and they said, hey, wait a minute, man. He's the guy that, you know, was part of the troops that suppressed the bonus marchers in Washington. You know, they had the encampment there like in 1932 and what have you. But I don't know. I mean, I just said words that, by the way, three words that if you get on the air, you're never supposed to say, I don't know. But I take some pride in saying that. And maybe if I was listening to a 25-year-old and they said, here's what we got to do and here's where we're going and this is what's happening next with the movement, I'd probably say, wow, this is very cool. But when some older guy says it, I go, yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
So right. I don't feel badly about saying, I don't know what the hell's coming next. And we say, demand the impossible. I mean, are we really going to demand? Here's our demands for our movement. You know, the abolition of capitalism, the abolition of the political state, the abolition of the petrochemical industrial system. What do you think our success is going to be in the next couple of months?
Yeah, it seems like might be a better idea to start somewhere else. But I mean, you don't know. One doesn't know where these things are going to come from and or go. I mean, capitalism was overall for a lot of people in the world, not only the rich, but for a lot of other. It was doing all right in the 90s for a lot of folks. There's a large middle class in the world, and yet still, the movement that rose up became a global movement against institutions like the IMF and the World Bank, and the nature of the predatory loans of these organizations became household knowledge for a lot of people around the world because of the memes that were being spread by the global justice movement without access to, big financing or media access or any of that. It was these ideas became commonplace in little towns all over the place, especially if there was a college anywhere nearby. I mean,
that's important. And here's what I want for the Fifth Estate, as you know, someone who publishes a magazine, is I want it to say, abolish capitalism, abolish the state, abolish the petro-industrial chemical society. And I also want to have an on-the-ground report from David Rovics, what they're doing around housing policy in Portland. Because if you think about, you know, say the industrial workers of the world, the Wobblies, the IWW, I mean, they called for, you know, one big union, and yet they struck for better wages or for better working conditions. They got hammered just as much as if they were going for the maximalist program. So I think you can have both. You know, I think you can, compromising. I don't know. I guess I'm not willing to compromise. And I don't. And some people shouting at the screen right now, you voted for Biden, you compromised, asshole. So, you know what? I say Gaia bless them if they think that of me. And because I love militant people, you know. I mean, as long as you don't endanger other people.
Peter, what do you think about the situation right now? I mean, I wouldn't be asking anybody to make really long-term predictions, but in terms of just the next few weeks, and a lot of people are very confidently proclaiming that there has been an election and we now know who the next administration is going to be, and you know, to whatever extent that what do you think is Trump does he have any plans for trying to launch a coup at this point, or do you think he's going to
I don't think that would fly with anyone in the government. Part of it is they're raising money around this Stop the Steal, half of which they're going to pay down their campaign debt. They're laying off workers from the campaign. And I think, you know, certainly they see a role for Trump in the future. Some people are telling him, you know, you can run again in 2024. You haven't had two terms. But I don't think, let me put it this way. If his organized armed base start any real commotion, as much as we may oppose the state and its repressive apparatuses, hey, 101st Airborne, 82nd Airborne, you know, they'll take them right out. So I, you know, as we share an internment camp together, you can laugh at me, but I mean, right now, I think Joe Biden will be sworn in as president on January 20th after Trump has done an enormous amount more damage in the next 71 days or how many every times it is. But
and another 100,000 dead of COVID-19, yeah, or whatever it's going to be. It's just it's so hard to predict anything in terms of like and what that might do in terms of any kind of reaction from the people in terms of social movements, whether from the left or the right or anything else. I mean, it's just it's such a volatile. And then also the moratorium on evictions, the CDC moratorium expires at the end of December. If that doesn't get renewed in the middle of a pandemic, I mean, it's obviously it will get renewed. But and that's why making accurate predictions is impossible, because obviously it depends on what the state does and what other forces in society do, and we can't predict that. But if, you know, whether or not the moratorium is extended will affect a lot of things in terms of organizing and general level of misery and a lot of other things.
Now's the time for solidarity, though. That's for sure.
There's a lot of people who think that the term mutual aid was just invented, which is always entertaining. Apparently, I guess solidarity was a more common term. I mean, what term were they using before mutual aid? I don't know. I mean, in the interim, you know, in the decades after Kropotkin wrote the book and before it started becoming popular again in the past year or so, I don't even, because we've been using the term mutual aid for a while now, you know, obviously.
Sure. But, solidarity.
Yeah, maybe.
Yes. Well, no, I was going to say solidarity usually meant more political and labor-based, you know, that very, you know, the UAW song, the anthem, Solidarity Forever, that doesn't really incorporate mutual aid. Yeah. You know, I was thinking, too, speaking of mutual aid, the project in New Orleans, after Katrina. I mean, models like that work. And that's where we should put our efforts. That's where we're successful.
And those types of models are being practiced all over the country. I assume it's not just Portland. I know it's not just Portland, but right, certainly here in Portland, there's so many different mutual aid networks that are focused on actually like just basic different needs that people have in society and at the protests, like food, medical care, security, traffic direction. Prevention of vehicle vehicular assaults. Yeah.
Well, let's go out with a commercial.
Yes, you are listening to Fifth Estate Live, Fifth Estate Magazine. That right there, you're looking at the summer issue right there, right? But it's called the summer issue, and the fall issue is going to be.
This is the fall.
That's the fall issue, and the winter issue is going to be Anarchist Review of Books.
That's right. Yep. And then spring will be What Next? Demand the Impossible.
And what next? One more prediction. How many former Goldman Sachs executives do you think Biden is going to have on his cabinet?
Enough.
Enough.
Yeah.
Good answer.
Yeah.
Thank you, Peter. It's been
Thank you, David. I got to tell you, you know, I did talk radio for decades, and every once in a while, some people say, "Don't you miss being behind the mic?" And I said, "Rarely." And I am so pleased to be a producer of this show, and want to congratulate you on the work you've done. And it's good to know that you know, people are tuning in.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be produced by you. Yeah, okay. Thank you, Peter.
All right, my friend.
Talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Bye bye.
And that has been a discussion with Peter Werby, a member of the editorial collective of Fifth Estate Magazine, a quarterly print magazine you can find at fifthestate.org. And this broadcast goes out every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, which I believe is now once again 6 p.m. in London, 7 p.m. in Berlin. Every Tuesday on the Facebook pages of Popular Resistance and Cable Community Radio, as well as on the David Rovix Facebook, Twitter, VK, LinkedIn, Twitch, and YouTube, did I mention? Yeah, all those places. And it goes out in audio form afterwards if you look for This Week with David Rovix on any podcasting platform, or you can just find the SoundCloud playlist front and center at fifthestate.org. And I will be back on whatever platform you're watching on. I will be back on that platform tomorrow at 10 a.m. And I should be able to tell you right now who I'm actually talking to tomorrow at 10 a.m. But I don't have my calendar open. We can fix that real quick. This is not the most professional method. Here we go. Yes, we'll be talking with Chris and Sarah tomorrow, who is a longtime organizer of the protests at the School of the Americas in Georgia and a choral director, and has a lot to say about the role of music in social movements, which is of particular interest to me. All right, everybody, remember, don't pay the rent. Mutual aid will get us through. Trust your neighbors. Be careful. Talk to you soon. Bye for now.